Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Symmetry of Soul, an online study group devoted to students of the fifth epical revelation and all those who might be interested in the teachings of the Urantia book. Tonight we'll be continuing our arc titled Existential Deity, God the Spirit. In preparation for tonight's study, we're offering the following passage. Reality is unthinkable without the Trinity. The Paradise Trinity effectively provides for the full expression and perfect revelation of the eternal nature of deity. The Trinity is deity unity, and this unity rests eternally upon the absolute foundations of the divine oneness of the three original and coordinate and coexistent personalities, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit. We'll be starting our reading tonight in paper 10, page 108. I'm Andrea Barnes, and I'm here with my three co-hosts, Justin Armstrong, who is filling in for Brad Garner, our ever-popular teacher, Dr. Chris Halverson, and last but not least, Kermit Anderson. How are you doing this evening, Dr. Chris?
I'm doing very well. Are you sure it's popular or problematic? It's one of those P words.
It starts with a P. We know that.
But just so everyone is clear, we're doing existential deity, but we wrapped up the previous series on God the Spirit. We're now doing the final series, which is just simply entitled, like paper 10, The Paradise Trinity.
Yeah, I knew that when it came out of my mouth.
Yes, we have to shift gears here between the from one series to the next. It's always tricky.
Right.
But thank you so much, Andrea, for leading us off there. And hopefully everyone was intrigued by the opening of that blurb we put out for this broadcast. And our challenge is to try to discover more about the Paradise Trinity. And Justin, thank you so much for stepping in Brad's absence here again. And thank you, as always, Kermit, who has yet another challenging review that he's going to give us, but he always rises to the challenge. Greetings, everyone listening. We'll just slowly work our way into yet another paper of deep water.
Right. Thank you. And Justin, how's everything going for you out there?
It's well, Andrea. We had a wonderful sunny day. And good evening to you, Dr. Chris, and good evening, Kermit. I always learn so much when I have the opportunity to study here with you, with this crew on SOS. So I'm really looking forward to studying paper 10.
Yep. And Kermit, how are you doing? This is a sunny day for you too, isn't it?
That's right. Justin and I live in the same neck of the woods. In fact, we managed to run into each other several times a week on our busy weeks.
And
we're both enriched by that association, I have to say. Let's take a look back at our final episode from our series, God the Spirit, and see how we wrap that up. Notwithstanding the seeming impenetrability of many of the abstruse aspects of the revelation, an advanced, methodical, precise unpacking of the revelation can yield a logical sorting of these issues, wherein the basics of how even something as complex as universe reflectivity is founded and patterned can be gained. Involving not only a complicated system of beings in reality, but also a precise transcendent influence of deity upon reality. In our attempts to acquire a correct understanding of existential deity, one of the more recondite aspects of the revelation, our discussion invariably touches upon the reciprocal interplay between the upwelling phenomena and processes of finite reality and the downwelling influence of deity on reality. The bottom-up striving for truth begins with assembly and analysis of facts. Top-down synthesis of facts illuminates truth. This model of representation finds countless applications and parallels throughout the Revelation. As a prelude to the evening's upcoming reading concerning third source personality, we considered the idea of selfhood and personality. In the case of the Spornasia, the caretakers of the material phases of the architectural worlds from Gerasim to Salvington, they do not possess personality, but being reactive to the first five of the adjutant mind spirits, equivalent to a sixth reality level as an experiential identity. Identity requires pattern. We are asked to think of this pattern as a supersummative, bottom-up energy pattern, essentially a selfhood without the cosmic fact of personality. Further, think of this selfhood as a cosmic reality welling up in a wholeness as opposed to personality, a deified level of reality from above. This personal-like identity hints at third source personality. We began our reading in Section 8, the final section of Paper 9, Personalities of the Infinite Spirit. In like manner as the Eternal Son, the Infinite Spirit transmits many of his powers and prerogatives to his coordinate and subordinate personalities and agencies. Most immediately, we are introduced to these seven master spirits of paradise who function to distribute the infinite spirit to the universes. The master spirits are deity coordinates of the infinite spirit. Subsequent creative acts produce the seven reflective spirits and local universe creative spirits. Symmetry of Soul has previously mentioned an associative coupling of the infinite spirit and the paradise trinity. An example of this associative coupling can be found in the function of the seven master spirits in their union in a deity sense, giving rise supersummatively to a sevenfold spirit, which we are told is functionally associable with Trinity functions. In preview to our next paper on the Paradise Trinity, we noted a parallel with the Trinity and the three deities to the sevenfold spirit and the seven master spirits. It should surprise no one that reciprocation in top-down and bottom-up perspectives are involved. Listen to the archive for further details. Further examples of the infinite spirit Trinity coupling are found in the creation of the reflective spirits and the local universe creative spirits. Such coupling produces the seven flavors of reflective spirits who, with the subsequent influence of Mother Deity, become reflective Mother Spirits. Similar Mother Deity influence over time results in the creative Mother Spirits. As with the distinction between the Eternal Son of all creation and the Creator Sons of the local creations, what the Infinite Spirit is to the total creation, a creative spirit is to a local universe. Symmetry of Soul has previously noted with amazement that the number of types of personalities and other than personal entities would stagger our imagination, let alone the number of individuals. The third source and center is source for a vast array of ministering spirits, messengers, teachers, adjudicators, helpers, and advisors, together with supervisors of certain circuits of physical, morontial, and spiritual nature. Not all of these beings are personalities, strictly speaking. Finite creature personality is characterized by subjective self-consciousness and objective response to the Father's personality circuit. In addition to creator and creature personalities, there are third source personalities, not part of the Father's personality circuit. These third source personalities, while contactable to first source personalities, are not as personal to us. We are asked to think of first source personalities as predicated on the I am, and third source personalities predicated on the all are. In reciprocal manification, all are is based on totality. I am is based on singularity. Curiously, the third source can bestow first source personality for the father in situations where for some reason he cannot. Creative spirits are in a class by themselves as third source personalities in the way they engage father encircuited creatures. In the case of us mortals, prior to our encirclement in the Holy Spirit and before the observed functioning of our personalities, the creative mother spirit actually functions for us as persons. First and third source personalities share all and more of the characteristics we would associate with personality, most having form and distinct individuality, although we did note that solitary messengers and gravity messengers, among others, do not have contactable forms. The remainder of the section and paper present thumbnail descriptions of the functional family of the third source and center. Further details and more complete descriptions of these groups are to be found in subsequent papers of the Revelation. It is duly noted and should surprise no one that these groups embrace orders that function at every level of creation, from paradise and extending to inhabited planets. Such downwelling ministry of the love of God and the mercy of the Son constitutes the living ladder whereby paradise ascenders reciprocally climb from chaos to glory. And here ends my summary.
Bravo. My goodness, I don't know how you do it. I mean, okay, number one, your words. Okay, abstruse and recondite. What in the world?
Thank you.
I was going to comment. You know we're getting in deep water yet when he has to pull out both abstruse and recondite.
I know. I wanted to. Now, abstruse should be familiar to all of you, but I dare say recondite may send some of you scurrying to your dictionaries, and I'm going to let you do that.
Oh, you are? Okay.
I'm going to let you do that without a definition. Those who are so moved shall do that.
Well, I mean, Kermit, it's such difficult material, and the way you put it together so beautifully is just really just wonderful. You know, I will start us out by talking about some of the things that have been in my mind the past week, and it has to do with, I listened to a lot of the shows on the evolution of civilization, and, you know, over and over again we see how the supreme, how, you know, we're moved forward in spite of ourselves. And it's just, I can't quite get over how the supreme works to take any circumstance and use it for the purpose of moving us forward. I suppose it's a bit like a mother, how maybe she sees her children doing something and she can use everything as a lesson. It's just been blowing my mind all week to think about those sorts of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's fundamentally, it's a relatively tangible example of a very fundamental fact that one must familiarize yourself with, one must begin to have some tangible relationship to in order to really embrace the truth of the Revelation, that issue of transcendence, you know, and exactly what you mean when you say that something has a transcendental influence over, you know, a system of things and beings below. You know, that it isn't some very rapid micromanager. You know, it isn't just merely domineering above. Now, it's to say that there's a transcendental influence over a system is to speak of the fact that you have this all at the same time, intimately in every way, engagement from above, you know, to that which is below. It's like, you know, to understand how your mind engages your body. Do so in a simple, you know, three-dimensional geometric from above way, you know, where one point above, you know, vertically touches one point below, you know, so that you think one point of your mind touches one point of your body below. It's like, no, one point of your mind equally touches every point of your body below.
Wow.
And there's more than one point of your mind, right? There's countless points of your mind, each of them touching every point of your body below simultaneously. You know, and just to reflect on what that means about that mind over body influence. Right? It's not just, like I said, just not, what you initially would think of as some sort of controlling mechanism, that's moving your body around.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very different than that. And now, if you can't begin to appreciate that transcendental relationship across a vertical boundary, you can't make logical sense of really anything. You can't make sense out of yourself, your relationship to God, any sort of fundamental nature of the universe, even materially. It seems like a magical sort of a thing, and often people invoke magic to explain what's actually a transcendental influence.
Sure.
But to not think of it magically, that's what I'm getting at, is to actually to have a firm grip, non-magical grip, on the physics of transcendental influence. And that, your understanding of everything will be transformed from falsehood to truth.
Interesting.
Even truth. See, truth has a transcendental relationship to fact.
Well, it's incredible how... Go ahead, Chris.
Well, further, I'm thinking of that 600 B.C. phenomenon of awakening that did so much to move the stalled Melchizedek revelation forward in preparation for Michael's bestowal, that our authors, of course, they're midwares and may not have a very good understanding, but these things are mysterious to beings, to very high beings. So who are we to think we can comprehend at any great depth some of these very transcendent influences?
It's even to beings much above us, it's scientifically mysterious, but it's not philosophically mysterious, and you don't want to you don't want to overplay every time the revelators are saying something about how it's mysterious. Remember, almost always they mean they can't get their measuring instruments on it.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's
so
scientifically mysterious.
Yeah, the mechanism, precise mechanism, eludes them. Is that what you're saying?
Right, because it isn't a mechanism, a manipulative phenomenon coming out of the front door, as we analogize it, that you can then analyze, and it's like, okay, so that's touching that, which then produces that, and you can't analyze it like that.
Yeah.
Because, it comes from all directions and no directions, and influences everything at every scale.
Right.
Right? It's a transcendental influence. And, we're not expected to be able to write down equations of transcendental science, but we are expected to use our encirclement in the Holy Spirit, which can know and understand philosophically transcendental influence. It will make sense to your human mind. It won't make sense to your animal mind, even your fancy animal mind. but it can make sense to a human mind that takes delight in cultivating, awakening that awareness potential. And now it's, and when you do, it be, you know, as I said a moment ago, it begins to change everything, how you understand everything. And you will begin to actually see yourself in true form. And you'll see God and your relationship to God in true form. You know, and you could even find the truth of the revelation. I mean, the truth of the revelation can't be found by, you know, even very sophisticated analysis. You have to be able to transcend the words to get to the truth. I was talking about thinking about, you know, the transcendental element, you know, engaging below and wrapping your mind around that. You know, but, you know, think of going the other direction. Right? You've got words, you know, before your eyes. And if you use your encirclement of the Holy Spirit, you can take a hold of those words in a non-analytic, you know, we usually, you know, speak of it as synthetic, you know, a non-analytic way. And, you know, that's the doorway that you follow up to find the truth that's there. So that's what I was saying. I mean, it's until you begin to be able to know, you know, what it means to go, you know, either top down or bottom up through a transcendental boundary of recognition, you can't get at the truth. I mean, the fact that this is required, that's why there's the famous Pontius Pilate line. Quid est veritas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Quid est truth. Yeah.
All right. I mean, it's why, as humans began to recognize that mind must relate to the body this way, everyone kind of decided, wow, we must just be going off into la-la land here. And it's like, no. You don't want to turn away from that, the fact of transcendental relationship, because just simply because it's not initially simplistically, linearly, materially understandable. You know, take delight in cultivating a God-given ability to know that fact, despite all sort of animal origin voices to the contrary that your mind will toss out at you. Like, no, that doesn't make any sense. You have to know, despite that sort of inner tendency to dismiss it as valid. You know, and you certainly have to overcome the voices of supposedly intelligent people, you know, who will definitely tell you that there is no such thing. I mean, it is the thing. And this is all, you know, worth kind of stressing a little bit, because we're about to read about the Paradise Trinity, which, you know, as you work your way up through reality, you can, you know, wrap your mind around ever more vast systems of parts. But eventually you get to the boundary. The boundary through which deity influences reality. Sort of the transcendental boundary.
There's a phrase.
To fundamentally understand the Paradise Trinity, you have to understand that it, you know, it engages reality right there at that transcendental boundary between deity and reality. Go ahead, Justin.
As Kermit touched upon in the review, the bottom-up striving for truth begins with assembly and analysis of facts. Top-down synthesis of facts illuminates truth. At the highest level in this coupling of fact and truth, there's a phrase in Section 12 of the foreword, Paragraph 4, the first sentence states, "Trinities are truths of relationship and facts of coordinate deity manifestation." So even at that highest level, this coupling of truth and fact is still in play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a simple example of them speaking in this modality that I'm trying to foster the recognition of. it's very, very key. Even the best minds of the planet have had this kind of this quest for this recognition beaten out of them by 300 years, 17th, 18th, 19th centuries of the Enlightenment, of really kind of getting into science and scientific analysis. Between that very heavy-handed influence and then the so-called philosophers going off on tangents of just absurdity and kind of destroying the reputation of philosophy. And between the two, the key things that you need to engage an epical revelation, have been beaten out of us. And we have to challenge that, to overcome that miseducation, as it were. An education that disrupts the unity of your mind, makes your mind too individuality-like to be able to know truth.
Wow.
We'll see them speaking, of the unity of the Trinity here as we start reading. See, just as I said, if your mind is too disrupted, too deunitized, you have a mind that just will not be able to figure out where to put what they're describing, in place, in your system of understanding. It just won't, the Paradise Trinity just won't be understandable. Because it's not to be understood as some yet another part. It is the whole.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, you're always saying that we get too much of the unity consciousness, and what you're saying now seems the opposite of that.
Well, I mean, it's not that. It's not that I'm calling for too much unity consciousness. I'm just pointing out that in some areas, like you're remembering, you have people that especially have a biologic tendency to go flying off, into fuzzing everything out in a continuum, into a unity modality. So you could ask, it's like, well, why would God make humans that occasionally have that unfortunate bias? I mean, mm-hmm. Wouldn't it have been better to just not give us that that potential to overplay unity by just keeping us very individuality-like of mind, at least to begin with? And it's like, well, you need to be able to get to truth. You can't do it except, through unity, recognition. As Justin was just, reminding us, that The individuality takes you to facts. Only through unity can you get to truth. Right? But it's not a unity that's divorced from facts.
Right.
But nonetheless, right, the unity is indispensable. And here we're just seeing a very kind of advanced challenge relative to this. I mean, that we're talking about this non-part element that we want to consider, the Paradise Trinity.
Non-part, okay.
If I don't have some, relationship to unity, I couldn't get to a non-part element. there's a place for the unity. As long as you, don't divorce it from individuality, right, it's that unity I that will lead you into truth, and then your other eye of individuality will bring things into crisp focus in the light of that truth.
Okay. All right. Well, now, Justin, did you have any other questions before we get started with the reading or Kermit?
Not I. Well, I just have a suggestion to anyone listening, something I found interesting. Since we're moving from paper 9 to paper 10, we spent some time referencing this coupling between the third source and center and the Trinity. And if anyone's interested, I recommend reading 18.3 and just think about the relationship between the Master Spirits and the Ancients of Days. I'll just leave it at that. I found a really interesting coupling happening there.
Okay. Great. All right. Well, without further ado, should we get started on our reading?
Let's give it a shot here.
Okay, we're in paper 10, the Paradise Trinity. We're starting on page 108. The Paradise Trinity of eternal deities facilitates the Father's escape from personality absolutism. The Trinity perfectly associates the limitless expression of God's infinite personal will with the absoluteness of deity. The eternal Son and the various sons of divine origin, together with the conjoint actor and his universe children, effectively provide for the Father's liberation from the limitations otherwise inherent in primacy, perfection, changelessness, eternity, universality, absoluteness, and infinity. Whew, boy, well, that's quite a paragraph.
So just just a little aside at the end there, since I was just putting that forward about the contrast between unity and individuality. Notice how they ended that paragraph with a long individuated list there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How much individuality precision you have to bring into play to just parse that final sentence.
My goodness.
Primacy, perfection, changelessness, eternity, universality, absoluteness, and infinity. And I had to separate all those out bring them into sharp focus. Okay, so you can see, we're going to talk about unity, but it's not divorced from individuality.
Mm-hmm.
It's right there in the first paragraph. They're making sure you're not divorced from individuality. Now, in terms of how they're leading us off here with paper 10, so just that first sentence, Paradise Trinity of Eternal Deities facilitates the Father's escape from personality absolutism. We've been here before. Let's remind ourselves in this arc an example of where they've spoken of this before. If you go back to paper 6, section 7, it's on single column, page 79, paper 6, section 7, the first paragraph there, let me, read the first two-thirds of that paragraph, and use this as a refresher. So it says, the eternal Son is that infinite personality from whose unqualified personality fetters the universal Father escaped by the technique of trinitization. Ah, see that word trinitization. See, we're going to pick up on that part of it. And by virtue of which he has ever since continued to bestow himself in endless profusion upon his ever-expanding universe of creators and creatures. And this next part, we'll see them coming back to this here, too, tonight. The Son is absolute personality. God is Father personality. The source of personality, the bestower of personality, the cause of personality. So there, we're picking this up again, this statement that we've already worked our way through some. Only now we're going to have that Trinity part, you know, very much in the fore of our minds, and understanding, you know, its more literal role in what they're speaking of there. Okay, so back to paper 10. Notice that second sentence in this first paragraph of paper 10. So the Trinity perfectly associates the limitless expression of God's infinite personal will with the absoluteness of deity. Okay, before you examine the specifics of the two elements that are being associated, right, just recognize in general, you know, this very fundamental fact that they're bringing forth there. It's something that we touch upon constantly on this broadcast. Right, distinction is vital.
Yeah, I saw that one coming.
Right? We're in a cosmic system. The individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. Okay? So we've got two very, you know, very remote, you know, kind of mostly abstract members of the system. Right? The one is God's infinite personal will, and the other is the absoluteness of deity.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter how immediately understandable or how not understandable the two elements are, right? Right? You know, the statement is universal, right? The individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole. The whole is the Paradise Trinity. So, you know, you just start with that basic fact. It's like, oh, yep, okay, that has to be the Trinity's the whole, right? We could even think about, and through the individuality of the whole, we're going to need Mother Deity there, and we're talking about absoluteness, so we're going to need something transcendent of absoluteness, right? You're probably going to need the co-infinite upholder, right? That kind of Mother Deity functioning to get into the science of what they're referring to. But nonetheless, if you can start with things that are most fundamental, say, okay, I at least understand, you know, in principle, you know, the validity of what they're telling me there. You know, and then maybe with time I can slowly get a better understanding of the complex, very transcendent physics that they're referring to. At this point, let's just remind ourselves that if the Trinity is involved with an association with the absoluteness of deity, that would not be the Trinity functioning as the Trinity of supremacy. That would not be the Trinity functioning as the Trinity of ultimacy. That would have to be the Trinity functioning as the Trinity of absoluteness. Right? So I could add that additional element. It's like, okay, of course, the Trinity is a whole, so that makes sense. And obviously has got to be the Trinity of Absoluteness. See, so you can at least take a hold of that, you know, and then see if down the road more of it becomes understandable.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
You know, and then just now the other little element there, you know, that's the eternal son of the conjoint actor. And note they do use the conjoint actor there, right, for the third person, that designation. In other words, as an absolute fact. You know, you're just saying that you, you know, have all of these hands in play, you know, not only the eternal son and the conjoint actor, but, you know, like they say, the various sons of divine origin and all of the conjoint actors, universe children. So you're envisioning all these hands that are in play, and hence, you know, what's in those hands doesn't have to be in the Father's hands.
Right.
So it obviously liberates him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So just that simple little, you know, that everyone can wrap their mind around. If you delegate, your hands are freer.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. The Paradise Trinity effectively provides for the full expression and perfect revelation of the eternal nature of deity. The stationary sons of the Trinity likewise afford a full and perfect revelation of divine justice. The Trinity is deity unity, and this unity rests eternally upon the absolute foundations of the divine oneness of the three original and coordinate and coexistent personalities, God the Father, God the Son, and God the Spirit. I felt like deja vu. I thought, oh, I already read this.
Yeah, there's part of our blurb there.
Yep.
So that first sentence, which we used another chunk of statement that's coming up here and modified it a little bit in our blurb, how we started our blurb out with that very striking statement, reality is unthinkable without the Trinity. You're seeing that in this first sentence. So the Paradise Trinity, as I mentioned, you know, early on, right, is the interface between deity on the one side and reality on the other side. Paradise Trinity is the single facet of deity that directly engages reality. And as they're saying there, see, the Paradise Trinity effectively provides for, because it's the interface mechanism, it provides for the full expression and perfect revelation of the eternal nature of deity. And all of deity engages reality through the Paradise Trinity. And reality is an avatar of the fact and functioning of deity. Or maybe I should say the functioning and the fact of deity. Because reality is an avatar of the functioning and fact of deity, reality is unthinkable without that interface.
Right.
The other facets of deity cannot, you know, produce reality directly in and of themselves, or from themselves. And it's only through the Paradise Trinity that reality can come to be this expression of the functioning and fact of deity.
There's another reference to this concept in section 12 of the Foreword, where it states, this Trinity constitutes the only deity reality embracing infinity. And it even uses that word embracing to give you a context of this wholeness.
Yeah, the transcendence, yes. And lowercase I infinity there is the totality of reality. That's exactly what I was referring to. Yeah. Okay, so there, you know, you can see in these first two little paragraphs, right, which are set apart by a large paragraph break, right, they're making some grand opening flourishes here. you know, and then we'll start slowly, methodically burrowing down and stepping through the details. You've got that second sentence there, hinting at what we'll get at, you know. I think it's in section 6, isn't it, in this paper about the stationary sons of the Trinity. Tell me if I'm not remembering the correct section there. You know, so that's going to be a very key fact of, you know, one of the phases of the functioning of the Paradise Trinity is justice administration. And we'll spend a lot of time on that. And there you see them, see, in this opening statement, the Trinity is deity unity. So just another way of kind of thinking about, I mean, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. Okay?
Yes.
To kind of double down like this and say that Trinity is deity unity. So it's sort of the unity of unity, you know, in other words. To think of it as, you know, in some ways as, you know, sort of a continuumness that runs all the way through all deity. You know, which, see, I could logically also think of as, you know, that only, you know, all other deity functioning would have to go through the Trinity. You know, and it can, because the Trinity is sort of continuumness is running all through throughout all deity. So all deity has access to it, you know, to be the interface to reality. You know, so, you know, you want to think of it in very not part-like fashion, right, as we've been stressing. I mean, in the reality perspective, it's, you know, it's no part at all. It is the whole.
You know, and as Andrea brought up in the beginning of tonight's show, this concept of supremacy and the complexity of it, there's a reference in 10.5, which we'll get to later, but I want to read this quick sentence. It says, "The Trinity is not a person, nor is the Supreme Being an exclusive personalization of the Trinity, but the Supreme is the nearest approach to a power personality focalization of the Trinity, which can be comprehended by finite creatures." So there's this like level of unity that even here and now we can sort of recognize.
Mm-hmm.
In supremacy.
In, you know, the unity of the Supreme, or even bring it more intimate, the unity of, you know, the Mother Deity of the Supreme.
Yes.
Right, in contrast to the summation of individuality, the Almighty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all these different things you can kind of keep in mind. And then, you know, just to look precisely, you know, kind of want to very much parse through these first two paragraphs and kind of get what their opening salvo is here. Then they go on to say, and this unity rests eternally upon the absolute foundations of the divine oneness of the three original and coordinate and coexistent personalities. Okay, so, you know, this whole, you know, visualization they're doing there of having it resting upon absolute foundations. You know, let's just, you know, go back for a second to that opening sentence where it says, "The Paradise Trinity of Eternal Deities." You know, we've mentioned many times in this arc, right? It's like, well, do we want to think about the Paradise Trinity top down or bottom up? Well, just the way they worded that with the preposition of eternal deities, I could interpret that of top down or bottom up. Right? If I wanted to do the bottom up, right, where I think of the Paradise Trinity as a super summative consequence of the three eternal deities, right, then of would mean derived from, one of the senses,
right,
of preposition of.
Sure.
Or if I wanted to think about it from the top down, then I could use the sense of the preposition of as relates to. Paradise Trinity as relates to the eternal deities. So, you know, it's there both ways. You know, and think about that here in this second paragraph. You know, this second part of this second paragraph here. So, you know, when they say this unity rests upon the absolute foundations of the divine oneness, you know, you have that, you know, very direct way of, you know, thinking about, as I was just saying, you know, it's that the Paradise Trinity kind of being a ceiling, as it were, for reality, right? And you know, and you know, as you reciprocate it around, you know, you have these absolute foundations, right, that give rise to reality below. And so you could think of, right, that Trinity just literally resting upon, you know, on the other side of the interface, in reality, those absolute foundations. You know, but you notice that, right, they throw in coordinate there, right, that those three are coordinate. Like, well, how are they coordinated?
The Trinity.
The Trinity, yeah, is obviously, right, you know, is superimposing something on them. So you can't just think of the Paradise Trinity as just being purely a consequence of their existence, right? Yeah, you turn back around, and the nature of the three together is, you know, is a result of the Paradise Trinity, you know, it being in existence. You know, so it's their coordinate personalities. You know, so all that's going on, you can think about all these, you know, precise details, not to mention, notice that they, even though they were talking about three absolute reality individualities, you know, with oneness, they then, you know, use the deity expressions for the three persons. Instead of the universal,
yeah,
Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit, or the conjoint actor, they said that God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit. See, again, as another way of reminding you, right, don't think of the Paradise Trinity as some sort of reality association, right? It's a facet of deity, right? And if you're going to think in the bottom-up, super-summative fashion, you need to think of the Father, the Son, the Spirit, those facets of deity giving rise to a facet of deity, and not magically three reality objects somehow manufacturing deity, even supersummative.
So you have to hold these apparently oppositional views simultaneously for truthful appreciation.
Yeah. Yeah, I've highlighted it many times. You know, that's why you could kind of say what you just said so perfectly. You know, recognition of what I'm saying. Yeah, the revelators do this all the time. Right? They have these dual constructions for sentences, for paragraphs, where you want to be able to think bottom up and top down at the same time, in order to,
yeah,
really appreciate the truth that they're expressing. Right? And so they blend the two together. And,
yeah.
Yeah, and you have to, you know, if you're down in some mechanical mode, it will appear that whoever wrote it doesn't know what they're talking about because they're not consistent. So you have to see it, right, you know, above a cold scientific factual analysis. It's a philosophic text, as I keep stressing all the time. And this is another way that you appreciate that, is that the top-down and the bottom-up views are blended together so that two eyes can find the truth.
And I'm guessing that any human being that reads this revelation is going to start off the process trying to comprehend the material from a reality lens, and only after an in-depth study will they begin to start to recognize that deity side that's being referenced with those two eyes, the deity and the reality. I can't imagine someone starting with the deity. I just can't even imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, not only did I not start that way, I mean, you know, it was 10 years before I began to even begin to penetrate the revelation, and it was subsequent to that that I finally began to recognize deity for what it is.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and then you turn around, it's like, well, duh, Chris, it's the first section of the foreword. right, you know, I mean, but we're dense, like you're saying, it takes a long time, right, to rework your, you know, your very entrenched modality of mind. Yeah, to see things anew, to see the revelation as it really is.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, Doug.
And you might imagine. You might imagine centuries henceforth that the deity, what you're talking about, taking you 10 years before you recognize deity and began to bore down, that this will be the starting point for a lot of people in an advanced, hundreds of years in the future. They'll be starting now. They won't have to go through all this.
Yeah, not to mention, I mean, what I'm doing right now. It's like I went through all that process. I mean, you're still going to have to kind of rework your mind, but I can help to speed it up by, you know, making sure you notice deity immediately.
Right.
Instead of, like me, taking a long time before. It's like, wait a minute, what about this word deity? I mean, it takes you so long to kind of, you know, pull that out of the vast poem, you know, when you're just starting on your own.
Yeah. Right.
You know? But, you know, there's hardly a sentence that comes out of my mouth that doesn't somehow touch on deity now. So, yeah, I mean, everyone... Right, is being reminded of it constantly. It's like, don't forget about deity, people.
It's comparable to... Oh, go ahead, Andrea, sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, deity, at first, did you just think it was sort of another word for God?
Yeah, right, of course, you know. Mm-hmm. You go, you know, maybe it's like, deity, I'm not really familiar with that word, so you go to the dictionary, oh, it means God, okay.
It's more generic somehow. It's not the religious word for God. It's a philosophic word for God.
Yeah. It's a synonym.
Yeah. Right. But, yeah, eventually, like you said, you know, even on your own, basically, you can, you know, it can start to dawn on you. Right? But just as the spirit of truth is attempting to accelerate, you know, the process of your recognition in your mind, and I can do that too, right? Someone who's already, you know, learned by leaping, right, over years, can encourage you to shorten that by learning a little bit by looking, right? It's like, notice the word deity here. Oh, I hadn't noticed that. See, I mean, I'm trying to speed it up by just getting you to notice the word deity and trying to somehow come to terms with it.
Yeah. Well, we are thankful you are helping us through this because I would have never figured it out. I know that for sure.
Yeah, I second that.
From the present situation on the circle of eternity, looking backward into the endless past, we can discover only one inescapable inevitability in universe affairs, and that is the Paradise Trinity. I deem the Trinity to have been inevitable. As I view the past, present, and future of time, I consider nothing else in all the universe of universes to have been inevitable. The present Master Universe, viewed in retrospect or in prospect, is unthinkable without the Trinity. Given the Paradise Trinity, we can postulate alternate or even multiple ways of doing all things. But without the Trinity of Father, Son, and Spirit, we are unable to conceive how the infinite could achieve threefold and coordinate personalization in the face of the absolute oneness of deity. No other concept of creation measures up to the Trinity standards of the completeness, of the absoluteness inherent in deity unity, coupled with the repleteness of volitional liberation inherent in the threefold personalization of deity. Now, this is where I would have just slammed the book and gone, okay, this book is not for me.
Good to have a
but here you are.
Two paragraphs.
And here, but here I am.
There's this wonderful viewed in retrospect or in prospect,
yeah.
is unthinkable.
Yeah.
It's just so wonderful. It's so wonderful.
It is. It is.
Yeah, and so there's all sorts of delightful things here. But you can see how much the universal sensor here, the author of this paper, if anyone's wondering what the capital I is referring to, how he's just pounding on this, right? This this key fact, right? That when you think about reality, you can't think about it without the Trinity, right? There is no such thing as a system of parts without the whole.
Yeah.
Reality is unthinkable without the Trinity. To get to the same, to paint yourself into the same logical box that the universal sensor is testifying that he painted himself into long ago.
Yeah.
The existence of the Paradise Trinity as this facet of deity that is the whole for reality, that's an inevitable fact. It must be. Otherwise, there's just absolute magic.
Level, though, when you look at the microcosmic expression of this, personality is a level of deified reality. The adjuster is a deity fragment. Those aspects of deity are trying to engage all this triune reality stuff. It's happening. It's happening with us here and now at this level.
Yeah.
This deity reality interface.
Yeah, even when we say it that way, as we're quoting the foreword, personality is a level of deified reality. To just recognize that you're not so much speaking about the mere personality itself there when you say, personality is a level of deified reality. I mean, they're telling you is a personalized self is a level of deified reality. I mean, the self is a reality that's been engaged by an individuated deity influence. So now it's deified reality, that personal self.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. But the personality itself is a pattern. Right. Is not reality stuff at all.
Yeah.
Okay. It's not a level of blah, 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 any sort of qualification of reality. It's deity. It's an individuated deity influence, right? The pattern itself, the spirit pattern itself. But yet again, the only way that individuated deity influence can engage your reality is through the Paradise Trinity.
Yes.
In the interface sense, in the more complete sense, you're related to it, right? In relation to the whole through the individuality of the whole. There's the Paradise Trinity is the existential interface, and the Mother Deity is the means, by which you get what touches the interface to the reality. What touches the interface from above, the deity influence, right? And then gets into experiential play with the reality through Mother Deity. I mean, the Parinish Trinity touches all reality, yes, but only existentially. So it can't put, in and of itself, it can't put anything into experiential play.
Yeah.
Right? It sees to the presence, but not the experiential implementation. That's Mother Deity's job.
Yeah.
All right. So all this, yes, again, see, just stressing the Paradise, how important it is to begin to wrap your mind around the Paradise Trinity and how much this is shattering your pre-existent monotheistic worldview. You can recognize the Father to his depths, that is the Father infinite, but you have to completely reciprocate from that, even those infinite depths, you have to completely reciprocate from that to get to the Paradise Trinity. Paradise Trinity is just not the Father. And so, firmly holding on to the fact of the Paradise Trinity, along with the Father, will make it so that you don't take the Father to the colossal error of capital P Pantheon.
Yes.
All right. That's, as they're stressing here, when it says, but without the Trinity of Father, Son, and Spirit, we are unable to conceive how the infinite could achieve threefold and coordinate personalization. See, how is it that you don't start with the concept of the I Am and then just in one step actualize it in totality as one infinite personalized fact called God the Infinite?
Right.
And to think about, it's like, if I'm not going to have just one fact, I have to somehow have, be able to break things into multiple parts. If this glue that wants to have everything all together in one continuum, right, is kept fully engaged, right, then that's all you can get is God the Infinite. But if you can take that glue and set it aside, right, then parts can form.
Yeah.
See, that's what they're getting at there.
And this is referenced.
You have to separate the Paradise Trinity that would want, that unity of unity, like we were talking about, that would want to glue everything all together so parts couldn't form. That has to be separated, and then there can be parts, like the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, the Conjoint Actor, like those three parts.
Yeah.
Okay. I like when you use words like glue. I can get that.
Good one.
Justin, would you like to take over the reading?
Sure thing. And before I start, thanks, Andrea. And before I start section one, I just want to state that what you just touched upon, Chris, is referenced at the ninth paragraph in the foreword, section 12, at a very, very in-depth level. But the basic pairing that you're touching upon is beautifully described in that paragraph 9, section 12 of the foreword.
Thanks for all the kind of parallel references there, Justin.
Sure. Okay, section 1, self-distribution of the first source and center. It would seem that the Father, back in eternity, inaugurated a policy of profound self-distribution. There is inherent in the selfless, loving, and lovable nature of the Universal Father something which causes him to reserve to himself the exercise of only those powers and that authority which he apparently finds it impossible to delegate or to bestow.
You go, wait a minute, wow, we've shifted gears here, haven't we? Yeah, so there's a reason why I was dwelling as long as we were there on the forward, okay, so that you can get very, very much a hold of the Trinity. Don't lose sight of the Trinity as they shift gears here now and start talking about the three persons.
Yes.
Right? If you lose that, you know, hold of the separateness of the Paradise Trinity from the three persons, you're going to end up back in the same box you started in. Oh, I think the Paradise Trinity in the Arantia book is just an upgrade of the Trinity of Christendom. Because, I mean, look, if they're just talking about the three persons here, that's what it must be.
Yeah.
So it's very important, you know, to not let that happen. Don't let yourself fall back down into that fallacy. Okay, now, self-distribution is in the title of this section. And here, this first paragraph is speaking directly to that self-distribution. And they very teasingly say, there is inherent in the selfless, loving, and lovable nature of the Universal Father something, they say, which causes him, okay? right, if you go to the deity perspective, right, and think of the different facets that make up the Father, one of those facets, self-distributive deity. All right, so what is that quote-unquote something? It's the facet of the Father called the Universal Creator. That's the self-distributive deity facet. That is the deity something, right? Which causes the creator and causes. Okay, so you know, that's, you know, they're kind of playing a little bit there, right? For an advanced student, right, to eventually sort out the deity stuff. See, you know, in the reality perspective, you just have to envision, well, you know, I've got this single reality object, and I guess there's something inside that reality object that you know, he just can't help himself, and he wants to delegate, you know, endlessly. right? But to see, you know, the reason the reality object can be envisioned as having that, you know, organ in his body, if you will, right, so that he can't help himself but delegate, right, is because there's a facet of deity, right, that makes that reality fact exist. The functioning of that facet of deity, called the Universal Creator, right, is what causes the reality object to delegate. The Universal Father as a reality object behaves that way because the deity behind him demands it. If you took that deity influence away, the Universal Father, the reality object, would no longer delegate.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. He is, you know, the realityization, you know, of the functioning and facts of the deity facets behind him. You know, and why is that kind of important to understand? You would like to eventually have something transcendent of your animal origin temperament. That something is called character. Right? And that character is not in the lower domain like the temperament. It's in the upper domain of the hourglass analogy of your mind also. The upper domain that synchronizes with deity. Right? Your character is, you know, the elements of your character are avatars of deity functioning.
Wait, can you say
if
that
one
more
time? If you don't
have
that deity functioning and influencing, you won't have that element of character.
Wow.
Just like the Universal Father, the reality individual, wouldn't have this, you know, nature if it wasn't for that facet of deity producing it in him. See, so to think about where your character comes from, You're not trying to start with the animal and somehow build upwards into some blob of character.
Huh.
You're trying to get your upper domain to become an avatar of a functioning and fact of deity.
Wow.
And that is character.
Wow, that's really different.
That's really helpful, Chris. I'm so used to, we're so used to putting the Father in this mode of sequestration, and we turn towards the third source and center, the God of action, when we think of the outward sort of expression of it all. But within those facets, those six facets of the Father himself, there's this distributive functioning facet in the universal creator. And it really helps me paint a much fuller picture. So thank you for explaining that. The universal Father all along has divested himself of every part of himself that was bestowable on any other creator or creature. He has delegated to his divine sons and their associated intelligences every power and all authority that could be delegated. He has actually transferred to his sovereign sons in their respective universes every prerogative of administrative authority that was transferable. In the affairs of a local universe, he has made each sovereign creator son just as perfect, competent, and authoritative as is the eternal son in the original and central universe. He has given away, actually bestowed, with the dignity and sanctity of personality possession, all of himself and all of his attributes, everything he possibly could divest himself of, in every way, in every age, in every place, and to every person, and in every universe except that of his central indwelling.
So just, you know, the way they're just, you know, the author is just, you know, going on and on and on in this mode here. In the same way that by separating the Paradise Trinity from that conceptual singular God the Infinite, right, which then allowed God the Father to come into existence out of that singular concept. The process keeps going. Everything that can come out of God the Father comes out.
Yeah.
And so, not only is the Paradise Trinity the only fact that engages all the parts, right, but its existence allows one part to become, more parts, and each of those parts to become more parts, and each of those parts to become more parts.
Yeah.
To see, the fullness of the Paradise Trinity separating, liberating the distribution of parts, that creating phenomenon. Like I said, the self-distributive deity is the facet is called the universal creator.
Yes. Divine personality is not self-centered. Self-distribution and sharing of personality characterize divine free will selfhood. Creatures crave association with other personal creatures. Creators are moved to share divinity with their universe children. The personality of the infinite is disclosed as the universal Father, who shares reality of being and equality of self with two coordinate personalities, the eternal Son and the conjoint actor.
Yeah. So again, I've already fully kind of motivated. See what's again behind this, this continuing explanation, that the author's giving. Right? That it's the Paradise Trinity is behind this, the existence, the separation of the Paradise Trinity from that conceptual God the Infinite is behind. They're not being self-centeredness, right? That conceptual self-centeredness of the singular fact, God the infinite, right? If it, you know, if that's all there was. It's like, well, aren't we satisfied with ourselves? Yeah, but it's not like that. It's beyond the immediate scope here, but you know, when you get into deity, right, and the fact of the universal one of infinity, you know, you have two reciprocal ways of thinking about how, you know, you're avoiding this singular fact of, you know, of capital B pantheism, as it were, right? That God the infinite, and you're allowing for the actual God the Father, you know, and everything else, like, you know, that comes from that, like the Eternal Son and the Conjoint Actor.
For knowledge concerning the Father's personality and divine attributes, we will always be dependent on the revelations of the Eternal Son. For when the conjoint act of creation was effected, when the third person of deity sprang into personality existence and executed the combined concepts of his divine parents, the Father ceased to exist as the unqualified personality. With the coming into being of the conjoint actor and the materialization of the central core of creation, certain eternal changes took place. God gave himself an absolute personality to his eternal Son. Thus does the Father bestow the personality of infinity upon his only begotten Son, while they both bestow the conjoint personality of their eternal union upon the infinite Spirit.
Okay, so remember way back when, we were talking about this, like in paper six, and I hinted at this. You see, so this idea of starting with the concept of the infinite I am, and just actualizing it as a singular fact, God the infinite, you know, period, end of story. Right, you know. You know, if you think like that, okay, it's God, the infinite. You know, you're saying that there's some singular personality of that infinite, you know, singular fact, right? The quote-unquote personality of infinity.
Right.
But instead of, see, the story just playing out in one step and having a period, you take, instead of having all of that will glued together as one personality, right? You were separating, with the Paradise Trinity, like we've been talking here with personality, you take sort of that, you know, that the essence of that singular, all glued together as one personality, and you give that to the Eternal Son. Right? So now all the rest of the will is not all glued together by it, by its absoluteness.
And that's the moment when the Father is ceasing to exist as the unqualified personality.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, he's not really the Father in that mode yet. See, it's, you know, like I said, it's, you know, it's sort of a pre-Father conception.
Sure, sure.
You know, that is,
will.
You can call this concept of a singular fact, God the Infinite. Right, so that, you know, instead of having all the will glued together as one quote-unquote personality of infinity, right, you give that quote-unquote, right, absolute personality to the Eternal Son, which is as a pure deity, the Son-type deity is this pure deity, doesn't have any backdoor ability to get to reality and swallow everything up again, right? Make God the infinite again. And then that allows everything else. And this conjoint personality fact, notice, so right immediately there, they say, you know, this bestow the conjoint personality of their eternal union upon the infinite Spirit. Okay, so there they say the infinite Spirit. But in the middle of the paragraph, they said the conjoint actor. Yeah, so think about this conjointness. If on the one hand you have the absolute personality of the eternal Son, and on the other hand you have the Father personality, in other words, the reservoir, sort of, with the universal Father. Right? If I put those two together, you know, the conjoint fact, it's like, well, it would have to have two aspects to it, you know, to be this conjoint fact. On the one hand, you would need, you know, you need to have a, you know, a definitive, absolute individual, you know, that's sort of, you can think of as what the eternal Son contributes to the conjointness. And that absolute individual person is the conjoint actor. But you'd also have to have a reservoir, kind of is immediately inherited from the reservoirness of the Father. Right? And I, as I pointed out in paper 9, towards the end there, when you're talking about third source personality, see, the infinite spirit, that term, it's, you know, where the adjective is infinite, the word infinite, that's indicating in some way that fact is a reservoir. Yeah, it's a reservoir for third source personality. See, so this conjoint expression, you know, has two aspects to it. You know, an absolute person, the conjoint actor, on the one hand, but a reservoir of third source personality on the other hand, the infinite spirit.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's why you're seeing both terms there. You know, and if you want to just very cleanly kind of refer to, you know, an absolute person like, you know, the Eternal Son's an absolute person, and you talk about the conjoint actor. But if you want to remind, it's like, well, there's this other complicated reservoir, third source personality sort of stuff. Okay, that's the infinite spirit. But of course, it's all just one third source and center. Again, there's no schizophrenia here. Right? It's just you have to think in very complex, multifaceted terms.
Yeah. Interesting that they use the designation, the materialization of the central core of creation. I haven't searched it yet, but I'm wondering if that's the only time where the Paradise Isle is refer to with that core word.
No, it's not the or. They're talking about the entire central universe.
Okay. Well, that's why they use it. Okay. Oh, that makes much more sense. Okay, now I'm seeing it. Now I'm seeing it more clearly. Okay.
Right. I had the same vision, Justin.
Yeah, and right off the bat, I was thinking, well, the bifurcations between the Eternal Son and the Paradise Isle, so what are they getting at here with the... But this makes much more sense to think of it in those terms.
Yeah. Remember, the entire central universe comes into existence along with the third person.
Yeah, flashes, flashing, and yes. Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked because I was confused.
And that's the first person as the universal creator, again, in reality terms, and the second person as the co-creator. Right? They give rise to the conjoint actor in the central universe.
Yeah.
It's that co-creative actor, and then once there's a central universe, you can have that experiential engagement by the second person. So now, you know, it's the eternal mother son, you get mother deity involved, and that's the coordinate creator, not merely the co-creator.
Okay.
Remember, we went through all that back when we were talking about the second person.
For these and other reasons beyond the concept of the finite mind, it is exceedingly difficult for the human creature to comprehend God's infinite Father personality, except as it is universally revealed in the Eternal Son, and with the Son is universally active in the infinite Spirit.
So, see, just, you know, remember, you know, our understanding is fundamentally dependent upon being able to separate, you know, and play back and forth across what we've separated. Right? I mean, our understanding is via the differential. So So they're pointing out, see, the more that you can, you know, you can understand these differentials between the three persons, the more, you know, you'll understand each of them, you know, as an individual, right? You know, you can't just understand them, you know, in isolation as an island universe concept.
Yes.
You need to, you know, to play them off of the other two, any one, to understand that one.
And at the same time, you have to hold the truth that these are absolute unique personalities.
Yes. Right. But as a finite creature, see, what did they just say at the beginning of that paragraph? Right. See, I can't approach it in some absolute terms. I'm not an absolute mind.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
I need the relativity. Right? I have to play it back and forth.
And that's also probably, this is also touching upon the significance of the sequence in the central aisle of recognizing the Spirit prior to the Son, prior to the Father. There's this very specific sequence of recognition and a very specific order.
Yeah, you can't just absolutely abstract one out of your relationship to the other two and know it. See? It's all relative, you know. So you separate the third person from the Paradise Trinity, you know, and in that relativity have a personality recognition of it. Then you separate the second from the third, and, you know, and then the second from the first. See, it's in that separation, and then you know, being able to play that differential that you can recognize. You know, say the first relative to the second, or the second
yes.
relative to the third.
Since the Paradise Sons of God visit the evolutionary worlds, and sometimes even there dwell in the likeness of mortal flesh, and since these bestowals make it possible for mortal man actually to know something of the nature and character of divine personality, therefore, must the creatures of the planetary spheres look to the bestowals of these paradise sons for reliable and trustworthy information regarding the Father, the Son, and the Spirit?
And then there's, yeah, see, we're a long ways away from that, you know, excursion on the aisle we were just referring to. So we need even more downstep relativity to work our way up through.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't, you know, even if you set all of the impossibilities aside and imagined you being plopped onto the aisle right now and going, oh, I'm going to separate the third person from the Paradise Trinity's presence. It's like, no, you're not. You can't just do that without all of the predicate of working up the staircase of the sevenfold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what they're referring to there.
It kind of sheds light on he who has seen me has seen the Father. The when you're trying to think of this sort of synthesis of the three that you're touching upon, some of those phrases have a little more resonance.
Yeah, not to
them.
Mention how confusing that is when they try to work through the Trinity of Christendom and Christianity. It says he has seen me has seen the Father. Yeah. Okay. The fact.
Yeah.
The truth. Right. And that. See again. That inability to approach that statement of Jesus transcendentally. Truth, transcendent of fact. Right. Leads to no end of confusion.
Yeah.
Now, when you see Jesus, you haven't seen the fact of the universal Father. Right? But if that's all you can imagine, it's like, well, okay, so somehow, to see Jesus is see the fact. So I mean, okay, then how does that work with the Trinity? And yeah, it all gets very confusing when you don't approach it from the top down, truth first.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Kermit, there's a whole other section for you.
Okay. All right.
He's up to it. He's the man.
We should be able to do this. Section 2, deity personalization. By the technique of trinitization, the Father divests himself of that unqualified spirit personality, which is the Son. But in so doing, he constitutes himself the Father of this very Son, and thereby possesses himself of unlimited capacity to become the divine Father of all subsequently created, eventuated, or other personalized types of intelligent will creatures. As the absolute and unqualified personality, the Father can function only as and with the Son, but as a personal Father, he continues to bestow personality upon the diverse hosts of the differing levels of intelligent will creatures, and he forever maintains personal relations of loving association with this vast family of universe children.
So again, we see, you know, we're very much focusing on the three persons, and even kind of leaning very, solidly on just the first person. So you could, again, see kind of, I've forgotten what Chris was saying at the beginning about the Paradise Trinity separate from the three persons, and, you know, your mind is just slowly falling back down into an improper concept of the Paradise Trinity. But, yeah, noticing that, you know, they're trying to throw in a little bit of help. By the technique of trinitization, oh, there's that word again. I can't forget about the Trinity. The Father without, you know, can't divest himself of anything. Right. You know, that conceptual God, the infinite, can't even divest itself of the Father, right? Without the technique of trinitization. See, without taking the glue out, they would glue it all together into one blob. Okay? All right? So we've stressed this a lot. You know, and they don't miss opportunities to throw in little things like of all subsequently created, eventuated, or other personalized types. Okay? Being very precise there. So, created, that's finite. Eventuated, that's absonite. Oh, and then other, that would be, in the co-absolute. In other words, eternalized types.
Okay.
They wouldn't have had to complexify the sentence. But they do. Right? They're wanting you to constantly have this ever more complete, precise picture of separating finite from absolute, co-absolute, etc.
Yeah.
And again, we've already extensively talked about this. You know, they're going to bring it up, you know, even more so here. This whole issue of the personality of infinity, the Father personality, the absolute personality, the conjoint personality. So picking that up again here.
After the Father has bestowed upon the personality of his Son the fullness of himself, and when this act of self-bestowal is complete and perfect, of the infinite power and nature which are thus existent in the Father-Son union, the eternal partners conjointly bestow those qualities and attributes which constitute still another being like themselves, and this conjoint personality, the infinite spirit, completes the existential personalization of deity.
Notice that we are, we're a little bit more, emphasizing, what they just did at the very end there, completes the existential.
Yeah.
I mean, to make sure that, when you think about unpacking the I am, the concept of the I am, in terms of purely existential personalities, it's a relatively short story. 1, 2, 3, period.
Yeah.
There's only three existential persons. And even then, only one of them is purely existential. That is, we were just pointing out, as soon as you bring the third person into existence, you bring the central universe into existence, which means you bring in the experiential relationship there, and you, the second and third persons are in part experiential persons.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But again, if you refer to the conjoint actor, I mean, that's just the existential person, you know, personal nature of the third person. And the eternal son is, you know, just that term is just the existential, you know, personal nature of the second person. To augment their names with mother. Eternal Mother, Son, the Infant Mother Spirit, that's bringing in the experiential, you know, personal nature.
Right, right. The Son is indispensable to the fatherhood of God. The Spirit is indispensable to the fraternity of the second and third persons. Three persons are a minimum social group, but this is the least of all the many reasons for believing in the inevitability of the conjoint actor.
Well, if this is the least of the many reasons, why did they bring it up?
Yeah. Maybe it's the only
one
we can
ask. Yeah, let's
ask
the obvious question here.
Question.
Yeah. As long as you're not too afraid of, oh, it's a sacred text, I can't ask questions like that. right? Don't be bashful. Don't be afraid to ask a question like that. It's like, okay, so obviously there's some reason why they would mention the least of all the many reasons. Right. Well, it must have something to do with the fact that this paper is called the Paradise Trinity and not the three persons. Lest we forget.
The first.
Right? Yeah. So, you know, this, you know, thinking about the minimum social group, right? I mean, again, we're right back to paper 112 again, are we not? Right, with this distinction is vital, right? Right before that sentence in that paragraph, what are they talking about?
Yeah.
Yet, you know, two is a relationship and three is a system.
Systems, yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. And, you know, and then you've got the sentence again, this distinction is vital, right? See, so, you know, those three, right, are, you know, are only connected one to the other in relation to the whole. Oh, yeah, the title of the paper, The Paradise Trinity. You know, and,
the first...
and even note, see here, you can see them saying conjoint actor. So they're putting in that mode of thinking of three absolute persons.
Right.
You know? You know, and it's like, well, okay, yeah, in relation to the whole, that's the Paradise Trinity, but it's through the individuality of the whole that those three absolute persons would be, quote unquote, connected with each other, right? Right. And so, what's that mother deity? What's the individuality of the whole? Well, like I mentioned before, see, that's the mother deity. That's the co-infinite upholder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just another way of saying the infinite mother spirit, basically, right? Co-infinite upholder, infinite mother spirit. Are those two designations usually referring to the same basic concept?
Right. I'm referring to the upholder part of the infinite mother spirit.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
The
just,
first source,
you know,
and center.
You just I'm sorry. Yeah. Just, you know, you're just emphasizing that element of that mother deity functioning.
Okay, the first source and center is the infinite Father personality, the unlimited source personality. The eternal Son is the unqualified personality absolute, that divine being who stands throughout all time and eternity as the perfect revelation of the personal nature of God. The infinite Spirit is the conjoint personality, the unique personal consequence of the everlasting Father-Son union.
And just noticing these two paragraphs, in the first one we had conjoint actor, here we have the infinite spirit again. Right? So, you know, it's reminding you, like I said, you can, you know, you can think about this conjoint personality, you know, in the sort of direct, you know, absolute personality fact right there, the conjoint actor, or, you know, the reservoir of third source personality of the infinite spirit. You know, and you know, so you have these, you know, you can think about all three of them, you know, in part as absolute personalities, but the Eternal Son is the unqualified personality absolute.
Yeah.
Right, the other two, right, there's, you know, they're qualified. You've got an asterisk. Right? But with the Eternal Son, it's like, no, that's the unqualified personality absolute. Right, that's a personality absoluteness that if it was allowed to be identified as anything else would glue it all back together into one personality.
Right.
See, it's unqualified. It's like it wants it all. But you're not letting it have it all by not giving it direct access to, you know, the sort of the individualityness of reality so it can ball it all up.
The personality of the first source and center is the personality of infinity minus the absolute personality of the Eternal Son. The personality of the third source and center is the superadditive consequence of the union of the liberated Father personality and the absolute Son personality.
Okay, so here, see, notice that we're, you know, we're not thinking in those terms like before when we had quote unquote the personality of infinity. Here, just think of you have this whole reservoir, right, of all potential personality, the personality of infinity, and you're thinking of that, and then you're extracting out the absolute personality of the Eternal Son, you know, which is that essence sort of that was permeating all through of it, wanted to ball it all up into one. Right? And so then what's left behind doesn't want to be all balled up into one, and is that reservoir, right, of the first source of the Father that can be individuated, doled out, bestowed as individual personalities.
Okay.
Okay. Just another way of saying that same thing that we've talked about.
Right. The Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit are unique persons. None is a duplicate. Each is original. All are united.
Yeah. And, you know, you can kind of understand how, you know, when you're describing it as, you know, the one is the total minus, you know, the other one, like they just did. It's like, well, I can kind of imagine those two would be unique. But why is the third one unique? Well, because it's not additive; it's super additive.
Mm-hmm.
That philosophic concept, you know, means that that's not illogical for the third to be unique.
Okay.
You know, the hydrogen plus oxygen doesn't, you know, produce something that's ununique. It's basically just a mixture of hydrogen and oxygen. No, it's water.
Yeah, a different deal.
Yeah.
The Eternal Son alone experiences the fullness of divine personality relationship, consciousness of both sonship with the Father and paternity to the Spirit, and of divine equality with both Father, ancestor, and Spirit associate. The Father knows the experience of having a son who is his equal, but the Father knows no ancestral antecedents. The Eternal Son has the experience of sonship, recognition of personality ancestry, and at the same time the Son is conscious of being joint parent to the Infinite Spirit. The infinite spirit is conscious of twofold personality ancestry, but is not parental to a coordinate deity personality. With the spirit, the existential cycle of deity personality personalization attains completion. The primary personalities of the third source and center are experiential and are seven in number.
Okay, so that, you know, the whole, you know, like first, third, four-fifths of it there, I mean, see, it's a way of, you know, if you just tell that sequential story like they were doing there, that makes sense to me. I can see how each of them is unique. It's a, you know, it's a way of, you know, having some take a hold of, you know, that, you know, speaks of them being uniquely different.
Yeah.
This one,
yeah.
You know, only this one has this, and only this one has this, and only this one has this.
Right.
But, yeah. But it's obviously just, you know, kind of for our benefit to tell that kind of little simple story like that. There's a way of getting a handle on that.
Right. And the existential story comes to a close there when the third source creates the seven master spirits as his primary personality creative episode.
Yep. But you notice there's got to be something else to this existential story, because the sentence is, the infant spirit is conscious of twofold personality ancestry, but is not parental to a coordinate deity personality. Yeah, where did this coordination come from?
Yeah, again.
Oh, yeah. What paper
again.
Are we in? Yeah, don't forget about the Paradise Trinity. Yeah.
Always lurking here.
Yeah, don't let them be magically coordinated. Right? And then, you know, you were bringing up in the review, Kermit, as it came up last week, you know, that going, into definitively experiential with the seven master spirits, not to mention the eighth fact, the sevenfold spirit.
Yeah,
and as
right.
They do there at the end of that paragraph.
Yeah. I am of origin in the Paradise Trinity. I know the Trinity as unified deity. I also know that the Father, Son, and Spirit exist and act in their definite personal capacities. I positively know that they are not, that they not only act personally and collectively, but that they also coordinate their performances in various groupings, so that in the end, they function in seven different singular and plural capacities. And since these seven associations exhaust the possibilities for such divinity combination, it is inevitable that the realities of the universe shall appear in seven variations of values, meanings, and personality.
Okay, so before we, you know, pick up on the sort of the obvious seven master spirit stuff going on there at the end, you know, just, you know, notice this universal center, this Trinity origin being, and, you know, not a three person origin being, Trinity origin being.
Okay. Right.
See, I know the Trinity is unified deity.
Yes.
I also know, right, the threefold individuality there. And, you know, kind of lurking between the lines there, you know, but they also coordinate their performances. You know, you could be thinking, oh, yeah, like, you know, triunities and that's stuff. But then you see, no, they're not really going into that. They're going to go into the seven associations that are behind the sevenfold deity nature of the seven master spirits.
Yeah.
But you could just kind of insert there, you know. Oh, yeah, there's also the triunity thing, where they perform, you know, in various groupings. And, you know, not to mention with the second and third persons, the triodities, you know, for that matter. But the immediacy there of, again, just like the preceding paragraph to end by going towards that sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. Right, we have this threefold individuation of deity unity, and then we're hinting at kind of downstepped expression of that, if you will, a sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. Notice when they say this at the end there, in seven variations of values, they start with values.
Yeah.
Sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, values of property of spirit substance. Right? And so that's, now that's the primary element there. Right? And then, of course, unity related to individuality gives you meaning, right? Not to mention the personalization of that spirit nature, right? To, you know, wrap a bow around it all. Okay. But just, you know, notice that how precisely that's constructed, and they're alluding to the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. That is a companion thought to this seven, or this threefold individuation of deity unity.
And they happen to have that designation, Master Spirits, in their name.
Yeah. Okay. So, it's kind of, like I said last week, it's a little bit, you know, getting into the more advanced stuff to really contemplate the sevenfold spirit and stuff. But, you know, see, they're constantly kind of setting up that recognition, you know, in these little parallel statements like this.
You know, I think it's just so profound that you have a revelator saying, I am of origin in the Paradise Trinity. It's like, whoa, after reading all this tonight, it just be like, how did this happen? You know, goodness sakes.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you think you have a unity bias that you've got to work on balancing. Yeah. What if you're an origin of that factor? It's so unity-like, it couldn't be individuated into the Father, the Son, and the Spirit.
Right?
Now there's unity.
Gosh. And the fact that this was somehow able to be translated from him through, I'm assuming the sleeping subject was the one who had to be used to make this happen.
Yeah, again, it's not none of this, you know, sleeping subject aside, you know, it's the self-acting adjuster, right? This is the translator here.
Yeah, really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we finished early. What are we going to do about that?
Well,
early? I'll bet you there's still questions.
There is that paragraph about how at the system level and at the planetary level, they have serious concerns because the number of self-acting adjusters are dwindling quick. There's that paragraph.
Well,
I don't know if we want to end on it, though.
The number of humans that can handle a self-acting adjuster is readily.
Correct, yes. We should specify that, yes.
Yeah, and since this is an emergency, don't think that the issue is going away. And again, we're kind of working on that. Right? A mind that can, you know, precisely get a hold of this deep water stuff, you know, that makes Kermit use words like abstruse. right? That's a mind, you know, that, you know, isn't dangerous to give a self-acting adjuster to.
Look out, Kermit.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, it's important to, you know, have a mind that can grip this precisely because it has an integrity that won't be sent off flying on a tangent by a self-acting adjuster.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
All right. Well, there you go, Andrea.
Like,
see, we're out of time now.
Okay. Well, we're out of time, folks. Join us next week when we'll be joining again to start in Section 3, the Three Persons of Deity. To all of you, a wonderful evening.
Take care, everyone.
God bless all.
Yep. Take care, all. I hope everyone is enjoying as we dig into this deity.